Good morning. Thank you for coming. Nice to see everybody here. I've been told to remind people, first of all, to remind people to turn their phones off, please. But also, apparently next Wednesday there might be a lot of traffic around because it's International Holocaust Memorial Day, and apparently there's a lot of visiting dignitaries coming into Yerushalayim. Just forewarned, there may be some roads closed, not sure, but hopefully we'll all make it on time. Okay, so as I mentioned last week, I have Brit Milah on the mind a little bit because Baruch Hashem, my daughter and son-in-law made a Brit for their little boy last Thursday, and he's called Ariel Yehuda, which I think is a nice strong name, and therefore I've never really talked about Brit Milah issues in this forum at all. We've had 170-180 shiurim, never mentioned the Hill Indian of Brit. So I think this is a good time, certainly if my mind is focused on a little bit, to spend a couple of shiurim, maybe two or three, dealing with some contemporary halachic and hashkafic issues that come up with Brit Milah, and there are many. Apart from the fact that it's this week's Parsha, that Moshe Rabbeinu is on his way down to save the Jewish people, and something happens at the Malon. What exactly happens, I'm not getting into now, but something happens which needs a Brit Milah from Tzipporah on either one of the sons, the other son, whatever, to sort it out. So clearly Brit Milah is at the center of the Geula, of the idea of the Jewish redemption and the Jewish self-identity. And there's no question that for all Jewish people, Brit Milah is one of the most identifying features, and it's still under attack. In a time where there is an increasing anti-Semitism in different areas of the world, attacks on Brit Milah are becoming more widespread, and I brought you some sources there from different places. Certainly in the Nordic countries, in Scandinavia, there have been attempts to try and ban Brit Milah. None of them have passed. But even in San Francisco, other places on the West Coast, Brit Milah has come under attack. And one of the questions that comes up is the issue of anesthetics. And people say, okay, if you have to do whatever you have to do, at least you could take away the pain of the baby. What could be the problem? Put some anesthetic on and do it with anesthetic. And yet, most Brit Milahs that I've ever been to do not use any anesthetic at all, at least that I was aware of. And the question is why? Why would that be? What's the problem? What could be the issue? So we're going to talk about that today. Other issues which I'd like to address next week is the issue of Matisa, which is fascinating, and how that works. We'll try and do that in a way which doesn't put people off the lunch. I also would like to talk about virgin birth and immaculate conception, which you might think is the wrong time of year already in January. We've missed that. But actually there is a fascinating discussion as to whether a baby that was conceived by in vitro fertilization or some other non-natural means can have a Brit Milah on Shabbat. And we'll talk about that next week. It's absolutely fascinating. And the whole virgin birth issue comes up, not to give you too much of a spoiler on that. That's coming next week. There's the issue of jaundice. As we know, I'm not going to talk about that. I don't think that's so on the issues that we need to talk about. Anyone knows that in Israel they do Brit Milahs on babies that they never do Brit Milahs on in Chutz La'aretz. Our grandson had his Brit Milah last Thursday, still yellow. But not so yellow, but it would have been a different approach in England, I think. But let's look now at the issue of anesthetics. Okay, let's just organize our thoughts first, and then hopefully we'll talk about the right things in the right order. There are three basic types of Brit Milah that one could talk about. There's Brit Milah on a newborn baby, usually Jewish, but not always. Obviously, there's a conversion that happens, but there's Brit Milah on a newborn. Then there's Brit Milah on an older child or an adult. There are all sorts of any number of reasons why a person might not have had a Brit Milah, but now needs to have one. And then there's Brit Milah on a person converting to Judaism. A grown-up, an adult, let's say, converting. These are different scenarios, and there'll be different discussions about anesthetics for different scenarios, and we'll see why by the time we get through the shiur. So that's the kinds of Brit Milah. Then there are four basic kinds of anesthetics. What kind of anesthetic could we use for a Brit Milah? Well, we could just put the person or the baby under on a general anesthetic and just do the whole thing when they're asleep. Okay? That's one option. Another option is we could do a local anesthetic, some kind of injection into the nerves in the area to dull the feeling in the area. Are there any myelin, by the way, in the audience today? I ought to know that before I put, you know, put my thoughts on the line here. Doctors, I assume there's a couple of doctors around. But there's a local anesthetic option, which could be done by injection. And then there's an anesthetic cream option that you could apply a cream to the skin in the area which would numb any, or some of, at least, maybe not entirely like an injection, the pain. And then there's the oral painkillers that you could take. You could give the baby Tylenol, and in the old-fashioned way, you could give them a drop of wine, as they do at a Brit Mila, although that's apparently going out. They don't do that so much. I was very surprised that my grandson didn't get any wine at his Brit. He got grape juice. Okay, that's the way the world's working nowadays. Okay, I didn't interfere as a grandparent. It's not my job to tell people what to do. But sugar water apparently is something that people are very into. I've not seen that in the same way, but they had at the Brit last week some very concentrated sugary water that they dipped a little bit of gauze in and put it in the baby's mouth. That also is a type of anesthetic, obviously a very different type from a local or a general. What could be the issues? So I've listed at the bottom of the first page and the top of the second a few issues with anesthetic. Issue number one is the anesthetic itself dangerous? That will be a halachic issue. And obviously administering unnecessary injections and certainly general anesthetic brings with it a certain danger. How will that weigh? What about the pain? Do we say that it's meant to hurt or not? So we'll talk about that. That's a real discussion, even though it might sound a bit strange. What about halachic intention? If we put someone asleep, can they have sufficient kavanah to be yotze the brit? Or who has to have the intention? Is it the moil? Is it the person, let's say a grown-up, because the baby obviously doesn't know what on earth's going on, but a grown-up, do they have to have the intention, in which case is that lacking if they're asleep? On whom is the mitzvah to do the bris mila, and when is that mitzvah? And then, just flip over the page, some hashkafic issues which I want to look at more next time, which is, should we be innovating new things? We never did this before. We'll see a number of examples today. We should do it the way they always did it. Except, how far does that go? Tzipora uses a flint stone in order to do the bris mila. I've not seen that at any bris recently, you know? People are very happy to have sanitized and sanitary, sterile conditions. They don't just pick up a rock and use that. So when do we turn around and say, this is the authentic, how authentic do you want to be? And then what about agendas? Everybody has an agenda. Our agenda is pretty clear. We want to keep the mitzvah. We're told in the Torah to do it, and we very much want to do it. What are the agendas of the people who oppose it? Of course, they might have different agendas. Is it based on medical issues? Is it based on human rights? We're not going to do all of this today, but you'll see people make all sorts of arguments. It's against the baby's human rights for the parents to be doing that to the baby without consent. Now, obviously, the baby can't consent, so they say, fine, but you shouldn't do it. Wait till the baby's a grown-up. The problem is, of course, parents make all sorts of painful decisions for their children to think about orthodontics. You know, in order to get them nice teeth without the child's consent, how far does that work? Are there hidden agendas? Are there anti-Semitic agendas? That's not for me to say, but clearly there must be, at some point in the argument, a concern. And are there agendas in Europe that the real problem that people have is not the few hundred or thousand Jewish brit milas that go on in Europe every year, but the millions, potentially, or hundreds of thousands of Muslim circumcisions that happen, which obviously is a much bigger issue. Is that really what people are concerned about? So again, I'm not necessarily the person to talk about that, but let's have a look at some of the halachic issues and the hashgafic issues. Let's talk about medical health for a second. We're not going to do this at great length. We talked about this when we talked about vaccination. If you remember, not so long ago, last summer, we had 3 shiurim on the issues of vaccination. I refer you to those. They're on my website. But let's look at a couple of examples. There is a mitzvah in the Torah to protect your health. Number one, Tana Rabbana. Maaseh b'chassid echad, coming up in Daf Yomi in a couple of weeks. There is a story of a certain chassid, Shehayim Mitpalel b'derech. He was davening, presumably long and hard, at the side of the road. Bar Hegman echad and some non-Jewish ruler, Cossack equivalent, whatever, back in the day, came over. V'nasan lo shalom, he wished him shalom. V'lo hichzi lo shalom, and he didn't answer, because he was in the middle of Shmona Esrei. Him to lie as you see in tefillah, so the guy was somewhat of a mensch, and he waited till he finished his tefillah. La'achashisim tefillah sa'amalai said to him after the tefillah, Reka, you're good for nothing. So halai kasev v'tarachem, doesn't it say in your Torah, Rak yisham elachal shmo nashach ama'ai. Be very, very careful about your life. Uksiven it says, v'nishmatim ma'ai l'nashach seichem. Now, of course, in the original, in the Torah of Shat, that's talking about issues of emunah and hashkafa, and not to forget what we saw at Har Sinai. But this non-Jewish Cossack is saying, but doesn't it say that about your health? Kishenatati lecha shalom, when I wished you shalom, lama lo yichtati li shalom, why did you not answer me? Im hayiti choisech roishcha b'sayif, if I'd have cut your head off with a sword, mi hayatoveya dincha mi'adi, who would have blamed me? Who would have sued me for that? And the Gemara learns from this, and the Shulchan Aruch paskens, that there is a mitzvah to do what we can to protect our health. So doctors are obviously very important in those decisions. And we looked last time, and we looked at vaccination in Hilchos Yom Kippur. If the patient says, no, it's fine, I can fast, and the doctor says, no, you mustn't, who do we listen to? Obviously the doctor. So if the doctor says, this child should not have a Brit Milah yet, then, or at all maybe, in a case of haemophilia, etc., then of who will we listen to? Of course the doctor, in the case of a child. But if the entire medical world decided that we should ban Brit Milah across the board, because for whatever reason they said it's not healthy, then obviously we wouldn't listen to the medical profession about a general, klali, theological issue like that, but only on a specific child. But no one in the medical profession has said that, by the way. There is no opinion in the medical world that no one should have a Brit Milah. We'll talk about medical opinion in a minute. But certainly protecting one's health is relevant. And that cuts in both ways, no pun intended. But that has different implications. Because on the one hand, is it dangerous to do the Brit? On the other hand, is it dangerous to give the anesthetic? And there are many moilim that will say that it's more harmful to the baby to start injecting with needles and more painful to the baby to start injecting than it is to actually do the Brit Milah. We'll get to that in a few minutes. So, first of all, we have to be aware that there's a mitzvah to protect our health, but that goes in both directions. Are there any health risks in performing a Brit Milah? Well, of course there are. There are health risks in all procedures, and there are a small number of post-operative complications. Infection can occur, excessive bleeding, excessive swelling, possible physical damage if the mole doesn't know what they're doing. However, a qualified mole working in proper conditions with a healthy baby should not cause any problems with a Brit Milah. And Baruch Hashem, 99.9 whatever percent of cases, there's no problem. After World War II, there was in the general population at large, increase of interest in circumcision for everybody, for non-Jews. And by the way, from a halachic perspective, we're not necessarily that excited about non-Jews having Brit Milah. It's not something that we promote, but that's a different question, which is not for now at all. No. But for Prince Charles, without getting into too many personal details. Certainly, by the 1970s, around 80-85% of American babies were receiving some kind of a circumcision in terms of the non-Jewish world, but that is going down. Now in America it's more like 75%, in Europe it's much, much lower. In England it's more like 12% in terms of newborns, in Spain it's 7%, I brought you in the footnotes, in Finland it's 2%. So most people are not interested anymore in doing this to their children in the non-Jewish world, and that is affecting people's attitudes, even though they used to be much more into it, and there are medical opinions that it does promote general health going forward. It reduces certain kinds of urinary tract infections or kidney disease and certain cancers in both the man and his partner. There is medical evidence to say that it's healthy, but there is medical evidence now growing from different agendas that maybe it's not healthy or maybe it's even harmful in some ways. But at the moment, nobody says that you shouldn't do it, but people are not so into it as they used to be. What about the anesthetic? And then we'll get into the sources. So obviously, the benefit of the anesthetic is to alleviate the pain. However, needles themselves can cause problems, possible bleeding at the site, accidental damage. You could puncture an artery or a vein. Anesthetic creams. What could go wrong with an anesthetic cream? Well, actually, quite a lot could go wrong. First of all, many moilim are concerned that the creams are not designed for use on newborns. And it may be that they have medical side effects on newborns which people would not want. People say that they make the babies dizzy or sleepy. Again, I'm not qualified to pass the medical opinion, and I'm not a Moyle. Speak to your local Moyle about these issues. Also, the parents have to administer the cream around an hour before. And of course, the parents are probably not the most relaxed at that stage in the day, and they put far too much on, which is bad for the baby, and it's a problem for the Moyle because it causes problems at the actual operation of the Mila, etc. So there can be issues with anesthetic cream. Leaving aside the whole issues of using clamps, I'm not getting into that. It's not my thing. So I'm bringing you pictures of different clamps and how that works. But most orthodox circumcisions do not use any kind of clamp. They use a little guard, but they don't use a clamp. Whereas if you go to a hospital circumcision, they will say, no, of course, it's completely unacceptable to do a circumcision without using a clamp. And there are different kinds of clamps. There's something called a Morgan clamp and a Gomco clamp, etc. And I'm not getting into a whole discussion about that, but many Moylins say that this is worse for the baby. It takes much longer. How long does it take to perform a bris milah from when they actually get to what they're doing? Seconds. You know, by the time the guy says the bracha, it's all done. Whereas these clamps can take minutes, and much longer than it takes normally, and the baby has to be restrained, etc. And therefore, many Moylim will say that actually the downside of changing the way we do bris milah, even with anesthetics, could be itself a problem. Go over to page 3. We'll get into some sources in a minute. Of course, the broader agendas, it's not really my place to talk about them, but there's an increasing negativity of causing circumcision calling it mutilation. You know, and I brought you various links to different articles in the newspapers on that issue. It's become connected in the public debate with female mutilation, which of course has got nothing to do with it at all in Judaism, and it's completely antithetical to any Jewish idea, but of course they're not the same thing at all, but they've become conflated. And I quoted here, Angela Merkel is probably the only time she's ever going to get a quote in one of these shirim, but she, number two, Merkel said that it's the Chancellor of Germany, it is a sobering fact in the public debate, that in the public debate about circumcision we observe partly anti-Semitic and racist undertones. Now that's no surprise to anyone in this room, but it's good that Angela Merkel realizes that. And of course one of the reasons is the Brit Milah is very particularist. It makes us different from non-Jews. Look at the Chinuch in number 3. Mishorshe mitzvah zo. What is the shoresh of this mitzvah? God wanted to fix in our people. We are separated religiously, theologically, to a different calling, to a different life of Avodat Hashem. He wanted to fix on us ois kavua begufan, a fixed physical sign. To physically separate us, like we are spiritually different to other people. That we just don't have the same life. And obviously, it's going to be irritating or even very annoying to some non-Jews to have that point made to them again and again, that we do not feel that we're the same as other people. Now, are we superior, inferior? I'm not getting into it, but certainly not the same. And therefore, Brit Milah emphasizes again and again that fact. And that's why, and I put in the 3 and 4 and 5, the penalty for not performing a Brit Milah is unusual. There are pretty much no positive mitzvahs to which there is a chi of kares, an obligation of kares, whatever that is, and it's not good, whatever it is, I'm not getting into definitions, if someone didn't perform that mitzvah, there's just two. There's Brit Milah and there's Korban Pesach, which of course go together. The two dams that got us out, the two bloods that got us out of Mitzrayim, Korban Pesach, and Brit Milah. And therefore, somebody who does not perform a Brit Milah on themselves, when they have the opportunity to do so, loses their place in Olam Haba. Number 4, Rabbi Eliezer Mordechai Omer, he goes through a whole list of people, including Hamefer Britzoi Shel Avram Avinu. Somebody who breaches the Brit of Avram Avinu, Ein Lo Chelek L'Olam Haba. We're dealing with very serious issues. And the Rambam lists in himself, when he passes this in Hilchos Tshuva, the following list of people have no place in Olam Haba. And he gives a list of the worst, including right at the end, Hamoshech Olato. There was a whole group of people through history, of Jewish people who had been circumcised, who tried to reverse that, and tries to uncircumcise themselves again. And that was in the Greeks, and that was all the way up to the modern time. And therefore, this has figured very largely in our self-identity. And it's no surprising that people have bigger agendas on this. Okay, enough of that. Let's talk about the main issues about anaesthetic at the breast. Is it too warm in here? I always say that about this time of the show. I begin to see a few people wilting. Okay, shall I ask them to put some air on? Okay, no, okay, fine. I think there's an overwhelming no on that at the moment. But I'm going to start. We could always open a window. That's all as far as I can go. Okay, fine. So let's have a look at this. There are basically three opinions on the use of anaesthetic at a breast. Opinion number one is that you're not allowed to use any kind of pain relief at all. We'll see why that is in a minute. Opinion number two is a local anaesthetic could be acceptable, but a general anaesthetic is not. And a third view is it's all fine. You can do whatever is necessary. Let's see who they are, modern-day postkin who come through on these issues in the way that they do. First of all, let's address the issue of pain. Is a Brit Mila meant to be painful? Well, it sounds like an almost cruel thing to say because we don't like causing pain. And in fact, there is a Torah prohibition to cause pain. Where does it say in the Torah you're not allowed to hurt other people? It's obvious. Look at number six. Vayisikim v'loisitza es b'nei amecha v'yahavta l'reyecha kamocha ani Hashem. You must love other people. What does that mean? Says the Targum Yonasan in number 7, Turachim lechavrech, deman antzani, whatever is hateful to you, lo tavid lei, don't do to them, ani Hashem. Meaning the Meforshim understand that the mitzvah of ahavat reim, v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, is not a positive. This is actually a very interesting chiddush in the way that they learn the mitzvah. Because there's all sorts of questions. How can I be commanded to love certainly every other Jew, maybe even every other person? How can I love people that I don't know? How can I love people that I don't like? Not everybody is likable, but somehow I'm meant to love them? And the answer is no, you're not meant to love them. You're just meant to not do to them what you wouldn't want people to do to you. And that is, of course, the famous golden rule, as it were, number 8. There was a non-Jew that came to Shammai. Amalei, he said to him, Girani almanash talamdeni kol ha'tarik kolak sh'ani omid al reklach. He says, you rabbis, you talk a lot. You can talk for hours. See if you can convince me in 15 seconds why I should be Jewish. That's just not a bad question. Can you do an elevator pitch, as they call it, for Judaism? No messing around. Just hit me. What does it mean to be Jewish? So, of course, Shammai was the wrong person to ask. He threw him out. He said, don't ask klutz kashers. He pushed him out with a building ruler, which I think is the midrashic way of him saying, you don't measure up. You know, it's ridiculous. There's millions and millions of books on Judaism. You're going to ask me 15 seconds to tell what it is to be Jewish? Pushes him out of the door. Balifnei Hillel, and this is, of course, part of a longer series of Gemaras about how patient Hillel was. Which is, by the way, why every college campus house for Jews is called Hillel, not Shammai, okay? Because it's meant to be a safe space for all nudnikim in the world to come as students. And I remember well, there's plenty of them. If you called it Shammai, there'd be nobody in. But Hillel said, fine. Here he converted him, and then he said to him, Amalei said to him, Da'alach Zani, Lechavrich Lo Tavit. Not what we just saw in Targum Yonasan. Which is interesting, because if you say Targum Yonasan was written by Yonasan ben Uzziel, then he was, of course, a Talmud of Hillel. It would fit. The problem is that the Gemara says that only Targum Yonasan on Nach was written by Yonasan ben Uzziel, and on Chumash, we don't know. That's why they call it pseudo-Yonasan, whatever. But let's leave all that aside, not getting into academics on that. Hillel, in any event, says, don't do to other people what you wouldn't want them to do to you. Zohit kol ha-Torah kula. This is the whole Torah. The rest is commentary. Zil Gemor. Now go and learn it. Don't think it's just enough to be a nice person. You've got to learn now Shabbos and Kashrus and everything else. But the essence of Judaism, as we see, is not to do to other people what you wouldn't want them to do to you. By the way, I heard many years ago from Dr. Alman, who won the Nobel Prize at that time for economics, he brought in a shiur a beautiful idea from a Mabit. The Mabit, from Moshe Detrani, about 400 years ago, says, he brings a midrash that says that all of the luchot of the Ten Commandments were covered in writing. There were no margins. It was just writing on the whole tablet, one side and the other side. So the Mabit says, Shleach. Like, so what? What does that even tell me? Why do I need to know? I'm never going to see the Luchos. That's not entirely true, by the way. I once went to, Universal Pictures in Los Angeles. And they have, just in parentheses, the copy of the Ten Commandments that Charlton Heston used on the movie. So don't be so quick to say you'll never see the Ten Commandments. They're in the, what do you call it, the Chinese theater, the whatever it is. And yeah, that's right. So they had someone showing us around, and they said, and one of the people there, which with me was a big group of people, non-Jews mostly, they said, what's written on them? So the woman who was showing them around said, no, it's just gobbledygook, they just scrub something on it. So I looked at it and I said, I'm sorry to correct you, but this is Ketav Ivri. They actually wrote, someone had enough seichel to write on the Ten Commandments in Ketav Ivri, in the ancient Canaanite script, not in the Ketav Ashuri, which by the way means they passed in a certain way in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Chaf Aleph, but whether it was Ketav Ivri or Ketav Ashuri, they wrote it on the Ten Commandments. Trouble is they got it the wrong way around. They put the Bein Adam L'Chaveru first, and okay, whatever. But this tour guide was very surprised to hear that it actually was real writing. Anyway, but leaving aside Charlton Heston, you're never going to see the Ten Commandments. So why do you care if the writing covers the whole thing? Says the Mabed, no, don't you understand? The first side of the Luchot, which was Bein Adam L'Makom, is about 180 words. All of Kiddush on Shabbos morning, Zachar, Es Yama, Shabbos, Rekos, Shoy, Shei, Shei, Shemim, da, 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 da. The second side is about 15 words. Loi, Tirtach, Loi. Yeah, this is like there's no words there. Says the Mabit, if the whole Luach on both sides was covered in writing, that tells you that the Ten Commandments came in two font sizes. The Bein Adam L'Makoms on the first side was in like 6-point font, very small print. And the Bein Adam L'Chaveros was in like 72-point font, very big print. The first visual image, Chazal says, that the Jewish people needed to see was this idea from Hillel, that the Bein Adam L'Chaveros were the big picture, and the Bein Adam L'Makoms were important, but they're the small print. I used to be a lawyer, believe me, the small print's very important. Okay, don't ignore the small print. But it's not the big print. And therefore, you can't cause pain to people just like you wouldn't want people to cause pain to you. That's a Torah mitzvah. There is a debate as to whether people are included in Tzar Balei Chaim, of not causing pain to animals. I know some people who I think might be included in that, but leaving that aside, there is an Issa Doraita to cause pain to people, certainly a Kal V'Chomer from Tzar Balei Chaim, if you don't cause pain to animals, all the more so to people, and therefore really we shouldn't be causing pain to anybody. So of course we should be using an anesthetic. There's a Torah mitzvah not to cause pain. Also, in theory, although we'll see it's not so straightforward, also, we are very aware of the pain of the Brit. Look at number 9. Rav Chaviva ikla le bei moira. Rav Chaviva went to a Brit and they asked him to bench. You need to ask someone to bench who knows what they're doing at a Brit because there's stuff to add in. Look what he added in. Barich shehasimcha bima'aynai. He added what we say at a Sheva Brochas, at a wedding. Shehasimcha bima'aynai. It's a big simcha at a Brit. Says the Gemara, the late Hilchasa Kavati, but we're not going to pass him like him, Mishum de Tridi, because people are a bit upset, the East late Sarah de Yunuka, because there is pain for the baby. So we don't, that is the practice, the halacha is you don't say, Shah Simcha v'ma'aynai at a Brit. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean the baby's really in pain? Or does that mean that people are worried because they're extrapolating their idea of what the baby's feeling? And therefore there's no simcha, or not enough simcha. That's an interesting question. Sounds like it's worried that the baby's in pain, but it may be the psychological state of the people, which is the reason why we can't say, she'ah simcha b'ma'ona. It's very hard to know how much pain a baby's in at the breast. The baby cries. Okay, but the baby cries when you take off the diaper. When you put the legs down, the baby cries. Does the baby cry more when you do the breast? Depends on the baby. I must say the breast last week, the baby didn't cry any more when they did the breast, than it was crying already. You can measure pain through heart rates. You can measure pain through oxygen levels as they go down. Let's assume the baby does feel some pain. That makes sense. That's a debate. I'm not a doctor. Also, we know that a very sharp cut by a very sharp knife, often you don't even notice you've done it until you see that you're bleeding. Everyone's had that experience. I'm not trying to say that there's no pain. I'm just saying that it's very hard to know exactly when and how and how much pain. But she'ah simcha b'ma'ona, we don't say. Look at the Me'iri number 10. Suda taben shall brit mila ein oimrim ba she'ah simcha b'ma'ona. Who passes that? We don't say she'ah simcha b'ma'ona mishum tzaradi nuka because of the pain of the child. The hasimcha, because the simcha mitvaldelet liyirat tsaros ha'tinoch. And here he gives the psychological insight. It's because my simcha is mixed up with my concern for the child, because the child is having a bris. Now, he says, umikan, from here, kasu ksas ga'onim, some of the poskim have written, she'af basudas chasen, even at a wedding, which lo yaleinu was tinged with sadness. She'meis aviv shel chasen. Maybe the chasen's father passed away shortly before the wedding. The ima shel kala, or the kala's mother, it assumes that they would be more connected to one to the father to the chasen, the mother to the kala. Eina ona she simcha b'ma'ina the ha'ikatara. So maybe you should gauge the simcha level at the wedding. Maybe if the machatonim are talking to each other, that might be something to do with it as well. But again, I don't think we do this. I think we do say she simcha b'ma'ina. But he says logically, you should say maybe not say if the wedding is tinged with sadness. Umikol makam, he says, never in any event, kasvar ga'onishib, a sudas shal pidyin aben, bichlau sudas mitzvah hi, va'oimrim bashe simcha b'ma'ino. Now, again, we don't do this. We don't say shah simcha b'ma'ino at a pidyin aben. But actually, if you think about it, why not? Because there's no bris mila, there's no tsar, the baby's just lying on a tray with a load of garlic, that can't be too bad, okay? Why can't we say shah simcha b'ma'ino? But we don't. That's not the halacha, as far as I'm aware, in most places. The Shulchan Aruch actually raises another question, which is, do we say she'echiyanu at a bris? So everybody here, almost everybody here, I imagine, is from Chutz La'aretz originally, and the minhag in Chutz La'aretz is, we do not say she'echiyanu at a bris. In the minhag in Eretz Yisrael is, you do say she'echiyanu. So what's the Shulchan Aruch? Number 11. K'she'av atzmai mo'el etvano, when the father, says the Shulchan Aruch, says the bris himself on the son, whom of arech, the father should say she'echiyanu, he's the moel. The im ha'moel hu acher, if the moel is someone else, yesh amrin she'ein ba'brika she'echiyanu. Maybe the father can't say she'echiyanu, because the she'echiyanu is when the father is doing the mitzvah b'shilei muto. The Rambam, and according to the Rambam, says the Shulchan Aruch, la'olam ha'av mevarei she'echiyanu, akol mila u'mila. The Rambam will pass him that the father says she'echiyanu, whether or not he's the moel. This is the Sephardi minhag. In Israel, in Syria, in Egypt, the father will always say she'echiyanu, no matter who the moel is. So what does the Ramah say for Ashkenazim? In our countries, noigim shaloi levarech she'echiyanu. He doesn't say why. He says the minhag is not to say she'echiyanu. Afiluka she'av atzma hu malbano, even if the father is the moel. Im loy, except in one case. Shemal benoy habachor, unless he's doing the mila on his own firstborn son, shechayev litzoytoy, that he's going to have to do a pidyon in 3 weeks' time, mevarish she'echiyanu b'shas mila, then he can make the she'echiyanu at the mila, the einu mevarish b'shas pidyon, and he can't make, and he doesn't make the she'echiyanu at the pidyon. I don't know, do people do that? I didn't go into the later halacha. But according to the Ramah, there's one case, even the Ashkenazim make a she'echiyanu, which is where there's going to be a pidyon aben, and the father is the moel. It must be a very small number of cases where the father is doing the mila, and there will be a pidyon aben. Yes? Yes, so we'll get there right now. So why would you not say she'echiyanu? Well, there are some technical reasons in Birkas she'echiyanu. Which is, you know, is it a mitzvah that something that repeats itself in time? Meaning, she'echiyanu v'kiman v'yanu lazman hazeh. Usually it's, Baruch Hashem, I've reached the new orange season. Don't forget, the original she'echiyanu is not when you eat the fruit. It's when you see the fruit on the tree. That's how the Gemara paskens, because you look at the fruit and say, oh, Baruch Hashem, it's orange season again. I've made it through another year. She'echiyanu v'kiman v'yanu lazman hazeh. There has to be something that's repeating. You don't make a she'echiyanu just the first time you happen to do something. People often make this mistake. They say, oh gosh, I never ate parsnips before. Maybe I'll make a she'echiyanu. No, unless it's a seasonal food. By the way, I picked that example because that happened to us once on the Shabbos. My wife served parsnips when we were living in England. You can't get them for love nor money in Israel. And the guy made a she'echiyanu. We were very taken aback. Okay. Another reason possibly is that maybe how do I know that the baby is definitely viable until 30 days? Maybe it's a suffek nafel. Maybe it is a nefel. Maybe it's not going to survive. But it's a bit far-fetched. And the other reason is because of the pain. Now the Vilna Gaon dismisses all three reasons. He says that you should make Shiachianu the Bris, and that's one of the reasons why the Ashkenazim in Israel do as well, because of the Vilna Gaon, Tamidi Agra. And if you look what he says in number 12, he says, and as for the reason of the pain, the gum im loimim mishum tzara diyinuke, if you tell me you can't make Shiachianu when you're not happy, it's not true. Have the mace of it. What about the case where your parent dies, God forbid, for who Yorushai, but he leaves your fortune? Mavarish time, you have to make two brochas. If the nearest and dearest sadly pass away, but they leave you a millionaire. Okay? So you make Shechianu, and you make Baruch Dan Emet. There's a whole show, which one do you make first? But it can happen. So he says, you see here that you can make Shechianu, this person's not happy, but they can make Shechianu. I once went to a very interesting bris, at a Shiva house. Happened, unfortunately the father was sitting Shiva, I think for a brother. And his wife had a baby that week, and they made the meal in the Shiva house. And I asked him, like, how do you feel? And he said, listen, people are able to feel happy and sad at the same time. He said, Malachim can't feel happy and sad at the same time. That's why Hashem stopped the Malachim from singing Shira at the Yamsuf, the Kriyas Yamsuf, when the Egyptians are drowning. Famous Gemara there. But the Jewish people can sing Shira. Why? Because you can be happy and sad at the same time. We all know this. Conflicting emotions. So since there's the Vagon, you can certainly say Shiachianu de Brit, and that has something to do also, as we said, with the pain of the baby. So different communities, different minhagim, etc. So let's look at the issue of whether there's meant to be some pain. Now, Chazal knew about pain relief. Anesthesia, basic anesthetics, were known in the ancient world. People used to chew on this or chew on that. In South America, they chewed on cocoa leaves, because cocaine obviously is the distilled form of what's in them. But even in non-South American lands, they chewed on different things, and the Gemara talks about that. But no one ever mentions the idea of doing anything for the baby or for a grown-up at a bris milah. So there was a landmark tshuva on this, who was Rav Meir Arik, in the Imre Yosher, early 20th century, and he says, you see from this, even though they could have given some kind of primitive anesthetic, they chose not to, which means you can't have it. And he brings the proof. Go over to page 5. By Avram Avinu, he says in number 13, Ve'etzem ayom azeh nimol Avraham. On that very day, Avraham was circumcised. V'Yishmael ben on Yishmael as well. So the Midrash says in Bereishis, rather in number 14, nimol Avraham. Amar Rabbi Abba, very interesting Midrash. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, hirgish v'nitza'er. He felt it, and he was in pain from it. Kadei she'yichbol lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu tzcharah. And he wanted the pain, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give him even more schar. The pum tzara, agra. The more pain, the more gain, says this Midrash. Avram wanted the pain. It says nimol. It's not that someone did the circumcision. He was circumcised. He really felt it. So Amar Rabbi Levi turns around and says, no, not at all. Mal Avraham exit. He doesn't say they circumcised him. Kan ela nimol. That it's passive. He was circumcised. Badak et atzmoi, umas atzmoi mal. He looked, checked himself, and he said, oh, I'm mal. Maybe that means he always was. I don't think he means that. I think he means that whatever happened to him was so painless that he didn't even feel it. He looked down and said, oh my goodness, it's finished already. So he learns the opposite. Amar Meburachia. Meburachia then says the following. Bahahi Hita. At that time, Ekel Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Levi became less serious in the eyes of Rabbi Acha. Rabbi Abba rather said he was in pain. Rabbi Levi said he wasn't in pain. Turned around Rabbi Abba to Rabbi Levi. Amalei, he said to him something very strong. Shakrana Kazvana At. You're a liar, he says. It's not true. Why did he get so upset about this? This is lies. It's not true. Elahirgish, he did feel it, and it's dire, and he was in pain. Kadesh Yichbol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Huzkaro. Why he's getting so upset about this is a good question. Obviously he feels that this is absolutely central, and you can't give a shot that the bris is not painful. The bris has to be painful. And based on that, the Imre Yosher basically quotes this Medrash in number 15 and says, even when we have anesthetics, even locals, you shouldn't use them. Look at the last line of 15. Hare tchilat inyan hamila, the central issue of the mila, hayadaska al yidei tsar, hichrita beli pu'ulat achilot. It's tsar. Pain has to be part of the mila. The Tzitz Eliezer agrees, actually, number 16. But Asher came near the Fiat Daisy, I think he says, Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, you shouldn't be putting any anesthetic creams, al gabi ha'eva, even locally, lifnei ha'bris, before you do the bris, prat lemikrim miyuchadim, excuse me, except in unusual circumstances. And the Tzitzit Rebbe will say, of course, if a person is in excessive pain, as an adult, and well, maybe if there's a child who is older, who is very distressed, and they're going to have to do an anesthetic. Okay, that's a different question. But regular newborn, he says there should be no anesthetic. Rav Vosna also says the same thing in number 17. There has to be pain at the time. We see that Chazal understood the bris as being painful. So Amr Chazal, and he brings another Chazal in Gittin, Ki alecha horagnu kol hayom, because you're killing us. You know, because of you, the Jews are being killed all every day. Says the Gemara, Zomila. There's an element of Mesirat Nefesh in Mila, says Rav Vodna. Upshitat, the kach psuras mitzvah hamakorid misinai. And that obviously is the way the bris always was, therefore no anesthetic. Rav Waldenberg brings Kabbalistic sources. Have a look here, number 18. Gam divrei ha-sefer ha-muflag ha-kavnon oyle sefraim. He quotes the oyle sefraim. Ha-muvim va-hagot ha-gro. Sorry, ha-gro gutmacha. He brings another sefer here, and he says, shekoyse shekavim kol adam. Everyone standing at the bris, and people probably have heard this, they give out tefillahs and stuff at brises as well. Anyone who's standing at the bris should have kavona al tzarotav for their own tzaros in life. The eight bechi hanimel, at the point that the baby starts to cry, miyisuri hamila, from the pain from the mila, shekol ze oile bli monea michol klipa. This can go up, this prayer that a person has around the bris can then ascend without any hindrance, without any of the negative things that hinder prayers. Shida kol gal tfil asom. His prayer will go up with the baby's cry. You see a clear proof from how important here is bechi hanimul miyisuri hamila, the crying of the baby from the mila. Ad shehi ola hashamayim, until it goes up to heaven, b'lim o'neya, without any interruption, michol klipa, v'koicha ita, and it has the power with it, lahoyl gam la'acherim, to help other people, ha'omdim al yado, shetit kabel gam tzilatam, lahoshiyam mitzaroteyim. And people daven with the bechi of the tinner. He says, I'm not going to tell you what the source is for this, but I'm sure it's Kabbalistic. The Torah Taraz, and the Torah of the Torah Tanista. And we know that Yisurin and the Siras Nefesh is essential, and maybe there's what they're communicating, like we, you know, said a few days ago in the Daf Yomi, that there are certain things in life which are gifts which you can only get with the Siras Nefesh. Olam Haba, Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and you may as well subliminally train the kid early on that this is how life is going to be, and you have to have a serious nefesh. You can't just marry into the royal family and then decide, I don't want to do that anymore. You know, that's not how life works. You know, it's a life of a serious nefesh. Yes?
Maybe you can give a reference from this week's parasha of the Hineina
Bochet. Hineina Bochet, the Moshe Rabbeinu's cry. There's something stirring up. It's a roasted delicacy. Yeah, absolutely, that kind of thing. However, and here's the big however, the Nishmas Adam, Rabbi Dr. Abram, says that he asked Rav Yaakov Hillel, go over the page to page 6, Rav Yaakov Hillel is one of the greatest Kabbalistic rabbis of the generation, and he said he's not aware of any Kabbalistic sources that say that the baby has to be in pain. Leaving aside what the Tzitzit Eliezer said, there must be Kabbalistic sources, says Rav Hillel, I'm not aware of them. And Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Eliashiv ruled to the Nishmas Avraham, which he writes in his sefer, that there is no medical requirement, there is no halakhic requirement for there to be pain, and if there's no medical concern at giving an anesthetic, there's a halakhic obligation to do so. Which completely goes against everything we've been saying for the last 10 minutes. So apparently Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Eliashiv and Rav Moshe Tendler is quoted as saying that if you don't give an anesthetic at the bris, then you are doing the Issa Doraita of causing, wounding someone for no reason. So you can see that there are poskim that go in different directions on this. And even though most Moilim do not give anesthetic, as far as I'm aware, those who do or who recommend it are certainly on good halakhic grounds. And there are many people who would back them up, even though, as I said, it's not so posh that medically it doesn't have any side effects. But you see here, the Shrita Eishtas, look at number 20, Amnam. Rabbi Dr. Abraham Abram, he's one of the main Talmidim of Rav Shlomo Zalman. He wrote the Nishmas Avraham, which is an encyclopedia of halachic psakim on medical issues. I think he passed away a couple of years ago, if I'm right. Maybe I'm wrong on that. If I'm wrong, I apologize. But he's certainly a major source on medical halacha. Yes?
Maybe there's no Kabbalistic value to suffering. Maybe there's Kabbalistic value to crying, which is
going
to happen anyway.
Yeah, okay. Oh, so yes, but the Gemara associates the crying with suffering. You're saying maybe the baby's some crying, maybe he's not in pain. It's interesting. I'm sure if they put anesthetic, the baby will still cry when you take the diaper off. Because cold, etc., etc. The Shrita Eish, look at the Shrita Eish, number 20. Amnam. Bahardama Makomit, with a local anesthetic. This is Rav Weinberg in the 1950s, 60s. But Oyster Ava on the spot locally. Yesh Panim Lahasir. I don't have a problem with that. There are many reasons to be matter. Shaloi Matsinu, we didn't find Vashum Makam Sheyesh Mitzvah Lamul Bahargamat Sar Linimo. Where did Chazal ever say you're meant to cause pain? God forbid, you're not meant to cause pain. The Avram Avinu, are you going to bring a midrash of Avram Avinu? That's Avram Avinu. That doesn't mean that every kid should be Avram Avinu. That doesn't mean you can't learn from that medrash that you're meant to cause pain. Well, since when? And by the way, there's another bigger discussion, which we don't have time to get into now, is can we even learn anything in terms of mitzvahs from Avraham Avinu? There's a famous klal of the Rambam he brings in Perish and Mishnayos, also in the Mishnah Torah, that we learn mitzvahs from Matan Torah onwards. Things that happened before Matan Torah are interesting. We can learn ideas, hashkofer, etc. But we don't learn halacha. Therefore, why do we do Bris Milah today? Not because of Avraham Avinu, but because of Pashas Tazria. Uba Yom HaShmini, on the 8th day, says there, you'll do Bris Milah. We don't do it because of Avraham Avinu. So who says we can learn from Avraham Avinu? You're going to tell me it's against the halacha to have a birthday party. Why? Because the only person that ever has a birthday party is Paro. So it's a goyisha thing. No? We don't learn from Paro, what Paro did do, what Paro didn't do. That's not halachic. That's pre-halachic. On the other hand, the other side of the coin is maybe we don't learn the obligation, but we maybe learn some of the details. I'll give you an example. If you go out there in the street and ask 100 Jews, is there a mitzvah to invite guests to your home? 100 out of 100 will say yes. If you say to them, where does it say that in the Torah? 100 out of 100 will start talking about Avraham Avinu. And you'll quote this klal of the Rambam and say, well, excuse me, you can't learn from Avraham Avinu. And the answer is actually the obligation of inviting guests is V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. That's how the Rambam paskens. All of the chesed mitzvahs are subsumed under the ahavta l'recha kamocha. Going to a wedding, going to a shiva, doing bikur cholim, doing hachnasas orchim. But we do learn from Avraham Avinu some of the details of how you do hachnasas orchim in the best way, in this and that, etc. So it's not so straightforward you can't learn anything from Avraham Avinu, but the Shrita Eish says you don't have to make your child into a moisa nefesh just because the Midrash says, according to one opinion, that Avraham Avinu wanted more pain for more gain. And therefore they reject that. So that's really the first opinion, which is the first opinion. The second, one that no anesthetic is allowed. We saw that in the first opinion. And here, Rav Eliashiv, Rav Albach, and the Shrita Eish, who say that local anesthetic is going to be okay and maybe even required. Okay. What about general? What's the problem with a general anesthetic? Just put the person to sleep, and they'll wake up and it's all a done deal. Please God, they'll wake up. Okay. But there is a danger, you're right. General anesthetic brings with it danger. So this raises the question. First of all, do you have to have kavanah to do a mitzvah at all? Or if you just did it, is that good enough? Meaning, you were reading the Torah, this comes up in the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Kriyas Shema. You're reading the Torah, you're learning a bit of Torah and Parshas, in Sefer Dvarim, or in Bamidbar, and you happen to be reading Shema Yisrael, Hashem, Elokeinu, Hashem, Echad, and it ends up, you read the Shema, and someone said to you, oh, Shmaya, you just read the Shema in time for Zman Kriyas Shema. And you say, oh gosh, I didn't even think about that. Are you Yotze or are you not Yotze? You read the words, without any intention of doing the mitzvah. If you fall in the sea by mistake, you say, oh good, I've been to the mikvah now. Shkach. I had no intention of going to the mikvah, but you've been under the water and out again. Does that work or does that not work?
It might be
impossible. Oh, it might be, okay. Depends on how you fall in. Okay, fine. Number 21. The Shulchan Aruch says, Yesh omrim she'ein mitzvah tzrichas kavanah. There is one opinion that mitzvahs don't require kavanah. The Yesh omrim she'tzrichas kavanah. And another mitzvah that they opinion that they do require kavanah. Let's say, in order to kavanah to at least be yotze, v'asiyas oza mitzvah. And he passes like the view that mitzvah shrichas kavan. Says the Magen Avraham in number 22, v'dafke b'mitzvah doraisa. That's when it comes to mitzvah doraisa. Aval mitzvah derabanon ain't a shrichas kavan. A rabbinic mitzvah, you don't necessarily need kavan. And this is a whole shas sugi. We could talk about this for a week. But that's not what I really want to focus on. The question is, okay, this mila is a mitzvah in a Torah. It requires kavanah. Whose kavanah? The moel or the nimor? Which person's kavana? What's that? Is the obligation with the newborn's on the father, okay? But also, and of course, a newborn child cannot have any kavana. They're 8 days old. But what about an adult? An adult has an obligation to circumcise himself, and the Beis Din is kind of responsible that this should happen. Who has to have the kavana? Or a ger, for example. Who has to have the kavana? Lachnitzoi v'britzoi shall Avram Avinu. The moel or the nimor. So look in number 23. L'chein mira, says the Sridei Eish, d'begadol hanimor. If an adult is having a circumcision, al yidei acher, through somebody else, which I imagine that's almost always the case, they're not going to do it themselves, tzarech hanimor l'chavei l'shem mitzvah mila. It's the person being circumcised who obviously has to have the kavana to be circumcised. Lo'ima hani kavana the moel. I don't care what the moel is having kavana for. He's obviously doing the mitzvah. He's doing the act. He's a kli. Shahari hu eino oisa mitzvah. But the moel is not doing the mitzvah. The person being circumcised is for kavana and nimol. Sagi, it's good enough that the person being circumcised, they alone have to have the kavana. Shuhu amakayim es a mitzvah. V'afafisha eino oisa mitzvah. Even though they're not doing it physically, they are performing the mitzvah. Ah, he says, but one second. V'amnam b'zecha yitzchak. He quotes this sefer, the Zecha Yitzchak, because if he writes, Shegodol hanimol hamoil hu shalucho, isn't he a shaliach? Meaning, he said, obviously, you can't have kavana when you're asleep. So if you're under general anesthetic, you have no kavana, right? So he says, but isn't it a case that the moil is just your shaliach? Meaning, if I make a shaliach to do something for me, let's say, I say you have to deliver this document in Los Angeles. And he's my shliach, it's an important document. And he needs kavanah. Let's say a man gives a get to his wife, and his wife lives in Los Angeles. And he says to a shliach, get on the plane, go to Los Angeles, give my wife the get. If at the moment that the shliach is giving the get, if the guy who sent the get is asleep, which he's likely to be because it's the middle of the night in Israel, does that matter? No, of course it doesn't matter. The person who sends the shliach doesn't need to be awake, only the shliach needs to be awake. So why don't you say that here? The guy made the moil his shaliach. The moil's awake, we hope. Okay? The guy's asleep. He's under a general, so who cares? Sleeping doesn't destroy the shlichut. Says the Sridei Eish, Nira, I don't agree with this. It seems to me, Shekrisas ha'orla hi mitzvah sheba gufoi. Brit Mila is not something you can make a shaliach for. It's a mitzvah on your body. The loy mahani shlichut doesn't help to make shaliach. I can't say to someone, you know something, you put tefillin on for me for the next week, I'm taking a break. I make you my shaliach. You can't do that on his body. I mean, he can put tefillin on my arms, obviously, but he can't put tefillin on his arms as my shaliach, because it's a mitzvah b'kofai. You have to do it yourself. So too says the Sridei Eish, don't start with arguments from shlichut. It doesn't work. Therefore, the person doing the mitzvah is the person being circumcised, and they must be awake. And for a convert, it's even stronger. Go over to page 7. Number 24 says the Sridei Eish, Ubashela, Ger Gadol, when you're talking about an adult convert, Shebale Hitkayer, he's converting, Zadai She'osel Hardimoy Basam Shena. Certainly you can't put them under a general anesthetic. Shehari Alidei Hamila, who nichnas leKedushas Israel. They have to have Kavanah when the Mila is happening, that this is introducing them to the Jewish people. Ve'imhu yashan, if he's fast asleep, v'shata mila, mi machnisa l'kadushis Yisrael? Who's converting him? Can't be the moel, oh, I have kavana that you're entering the Jewish people. What does that do? V'vadai she'ein lo v'shal moel machnisa l'kadushis Yisrael. For sure the moel doesn't do that act of introducing him to the Jewish people. Afilu imhu yashan, even if he's sleeping, sherak al yidei kiyum brit kodesh hu nichnas l'kadushis. And that makes a lot of sense if you think about it. How can you do that act when you are, how can you have kavana when you're fast asleep? He says in 25, my maskana is, maskana tadvarim, the Sriyesh again, shegodl haba limol v'chein ger godl eil haradim amasam shena. You shouldn't put them under a general. Rag bezurikat sam makomit, but a local anesthetic, kidei lahashtik et hakeiv, eshala hakel. And that's the standard practice. On a newborn, they won't do a bris milah with anesthetic in some cases, but on a grown-up, they always will use anesthetic. Yeah. Yes, Rabbi. Yes, sir. Right. Right, right. Okay. He's saying that Moshe Feinstein had a case where a student came to him and he said, the student's upset, and my mother never went to the mikveh, so I was born without my mother having gone to the mikveh, Taras Mishpacha. Right, right. It's a famous case, and Ramosha said, your mother, Mitzvah, went swimming. She went swimming, so you know, she went in the ocean, Mitzvah maybe doesn't need kavana, and then your question comes up in his tshuva, which is, well, what about the swimsuit and all that, chazita, he answers all of those questions. So that's a famous tshuva of Rabbi. But the truth is, Rav Moshe is also trying to make the guy feel better, that he should marry a nice girl with good midas, etc., etc. But the Sridi A therefore says, general anesthetic, no, but local anesthetic, certainly for a grown-up, yes. And as far as I'm aware, they will always use some kind of local anesthetic when it comes to a grown-up. For a baby, the Sridi A says, look, really you could put, in theory, the baby under a general anesthetic, but A, it's not healthy, it's dangerous, and B, it's not the way the bris milah works. He says, you know, it looks like you're doing milah on a stone. You know, the kid's fast asleep. It looks more like an assault, a chavala, than a mitzvah that you're doing when the baby's fast asleep. He says, I don't like it, although I'm not saying it's osa. Okay. But then there is a third opinion. Rabbi Avadi Yosef and others, the Maharsham, says, you know something, it's fine. They can be fast asleep. Even an adult. Even a ger can be fast asleep. Why? Didn't we say he has to have kavanah for the mitzvah? Mitzvah Sri for kavanah. So he says, look, when is the mitzvah of Mila taking place? Look at number 27. The Gemara Menachos. V'shasha nichnas David leveis amerchas. When David went to the bathhouse, v'ra atma oimed aram, and he saw himself naked, unable to do what he can do. He can't daven, he can't learn, he's got no mitzvahs. Amma, he said, oili she'emod aram beloi mitzvah. How terrible that I'm standing without a mitzvah. When he remembered he was had a bris milah, okay, nityasha da'asa, then he said, oh, Baruch Hashem, I am doing a mitzvah, I have a bris milah. You see from there, say many of the Mephoroshim, that the mitzvah of milah is not the act of bris milah. It's being gemalt, as they say. It's having the milah. It's the ongoing mitzvah throughout the life. If I'm somebody that has a bris milah, and therefore, if that's the case, then who cares what happens at the moment of incision? The ger, when he wakes up, will say, Baruch Hashem, I'm now doing the mitzvah of Mila. The mitzvah is ongoing for, you know, the whole of my life. And if you say that, and Rav Avadi seems to go down that route, he says, basically, general anesthetic is permitted. Rav Vosner is not happy about anesthetics in normal, but he says, under certain circumstances, maybe even a general, will be okay. And therefore, these basically, in summary, are the three perspectives. A, again, just to summarize, some people say no anesthetics at all, some people say local but not general, and some people will say, certainly on a grown-up, and some people will say even a general might be okay in certain cases. Rav Moshe and others, Rav Moshe Feinstein, is very concerned about the medical implications, not just for medicine, but for halacha. He says you can't endanger somebody's life just to alleviate pain from a medical perspective. And that obviously has nothing to do with bris milah. It's a general question in medical procedures. How much of a risk do you want to take in order to alleviate pain, which is unpleasant, but it's not going to kill you? And that's obviously a cheshbon, and Rav Moshe uses that in terms of anesthetics, and he's very concerned that medical opinion should really say this is safe in order to go ahead with it. And the last thing, which I'm not going to really talk about now, is this argument of innovation. Chadosh osam in HaTorah. We never did it that way, we're not going to do it that way. We have to do it the old-fashioned way. Because we're worried about innovation and all sorts of agendas and reform, etc., etc. And one of the big cause célèbre on this was Metzisa, the issue of how you draw the blood from the baby. Okay, do you use a kli? Do you not use a kli? And people have very strong opinions on this, one way or the other. Certain Moilim, you don't know what they're doing. They put the talus right over their head, and then that partly because they don't want to get involved in any discussion. No one should see what's going on. Okay. And that's something we need to really give some thought to, probably next week. There's an important note of Yehuda, there's another important treaty that talks about Bat Mitzvah, and we need to give some thought about that. But next week, before we get into that, first of all, a little bit, we'll talk about Immaculate Conception, and we'll see how that figures in Brisus on Shabbos. I'll leave you thinking about that between now and next week. Have a wonderful week.